Well, welcome everyone to our inaugural podcast. I am the Fat Man Farmer, and I am joined by
Wee Wild Woman.
Wee Wild Woman, for all of you who don't know. Her real name is not Wee. We use that as her online name so that anyone who comes to talk to her, because she is a very social 11-year-old, will know that they are not personal friends, but they know her from online. So, back to our story. So, we run, or co-run, with Senior Farm Boss, Wolf Beach Farms. We're in Greencastle, Indiana. We have 300 plus animals of various species. We is homeschooled, and we are on our way to Indianapolis to pick up spent grain from a distillery to feed to our animals. A lot of people have been asking us to do a podcast and talk about what life is like on the farm and some of our deep discussions that we get into, such as the multiverse, black holes, theoretical physics, government, taxes, business starting, all sorts of different things. And some don't believe some of the conversations we have, and that the 11-year-old is as articulate and vocal about her opinions.
Yes, they do not believe I had my speech.
Anyway, so it may be PG, it may not. Just to give you a heads up, since we are on the road, you'll probably hear road noise and whatnot. Occasional profanities, as someone may cut us off or inability to drive. So, we're going to wing it here. We don't really have a script, set topic, or anything. We figured we have an hour to 2 hours in the vehicle. Might as well use this to be creative and constructive, and we'll just see how it goes. So let's start off with about the farm and about the animals. So I was not raised farming. I was raised in suburbs. We moved around a lot. And essentially my first time farming was when we bought our farm in 2015. We had done some suburban farming in Indy. She's pointing at me because she wants to say that we had chickens and ducks and rabbits while we lived in Indianapolis in a suburban lot. So only on 1/3 of an acre, but we had fruit trees, fruit bushes, edible landscaping, we had fish that we ate, herbs that we ate, a vegetable garden, we had a small greenhouse. We did a lot of experimental growing and things there, but just because you don't have a lot of acreage doesn't mean you can't produce some of your own food. So on our farm, we have a horse and a pony for right now. We are looking to get more. We have two cows. One of them is a meat, an Angus, and one of them is an Angus Holstein cross, which we're hoping to get AI and milked. And we're looking to grow more cows. Black Betty has her own following. Her actual real name is the Sap Sucking Street Walking Fence Jumping Manual Eating Heifer. Black Betty. She's a pet. She keeps down on the grass and the lawn care. Let's see, we have 200 plus sheep. We are working on breeding our own
Franken sheep.
Franken sheep, thank you. That has 12 different qualities from 8 different breeds that we're hoping to get the genetic line stabilized. So it's a wool breed, and there's certain wool qualities that we want. We also want a bigger frame sheet, but not too big, so that the average person would be able to handle them. We started off with some Shetlands, which max out maybe 100, 150 pounds, and then we have some bigger frame sheep who are 300 plus pounds. But what's nice about the smaller frames is that if a sheep goes down or we needed to transport one from a back pasture up to the barn or to a medical isolation area, we can carry it. Whereas the bigger animals, we're going to have to get a trailer or a tractor or something out there, and that's just not as easy for our management stock. We have geese. We have guardian geese. They also patrol the orchards to keep some of the grass and things down. We have meat chickens and egg chickens. We have turkeys. We have ducks. We have pigs, which we are in the process of switching from meat-based pigs. So these would be what you typically see in the stores, so Hampshires, Duroks, those kind, to a more pasture-raised, which is our American Guinea hogs. And they can live more on forage and grasses and pasture than having to have a higher protein feed like some of the other ones. They also take 18 months to raise versus 9 months. It's a slower growing, but with feed prices currently doubled and sometimes tripled in some areas, it's just getting too expensive to feed the pigs. Now, we currently don't buy feed, which is a whole nother show on our pig club project, but we just don't want to have all of our food sources for our animals dry up or be too expensive, and then we're in a situation of we have to downsize dramatically, we have to take a loss on the animals, or we just have to butcher them when we are not in a good situation to butcher them, either freezer space or having appointments with the butchers. We don't want to be in a situation where we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. So a little bit of planning goes a long way. We have goats, and most of the goats are Wee's pets. We do have some dairy goats that we are currently milking, and we built our own milking machine because a $700 milking machine was a little too expensive for our taste. So we built one for about $150, and we can go into more detail about that someday as well. So people often ask, oh my gosh, how do you ever get anything done with that many animals? And to be honest, it really doesn't take that long on a day-to-day basis. Now, sometimes we have big projects like fencing, where it takes all hands to do fencing, or moving animals, or shearing animals, but those are...
Or sheep escape.
Or sheep escape, or the cows escape, hence the street walking heifer.
She goes walk around on the town.
Walkabout. She's been out twice and had to be escorted home by the sheriff's department. She's a very naughty cow. But those are one-off instances. And for the most part, we design all of our chores to be able to be performed by an 11-year-old. Wee is 11.
Yep.
So do you want to talk about what your morning entails when you get up? And what time do you get up? You don't get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning like some people before the chickens get up.
No, that's way too early. Somewhere around 7 to 8.
Whenever you feel like it.
Yeah, basically whenever I feel like it.
Okay, so you get up. Then what do you do?
I usually go down and eat and get dressed to go out and do chores and that.
Breakfast?
Yeah.
So make your own breakfast?
It depends. I usually have cereal in that or whatever really we make in that.
So there's pancakes, there's breads, there's waffles. For the most part, you make your own breakfast.
Yeah, pretty much so, unless I want eggs in that.
So you get dressed and you go out and do chores. So what are your chores in the morning?
Letting the chickens out of their coop, letting ducks out and feeding them in the morning or at night. Then going into the barn and feeding the goats in that, which we have in the barn, some of the goats. And then feeding my pet pig, Miss Piggy.
Forgot about Miss Piggy. So why are some goats in the barn and some goats not?
Well, we have our milking goat and her baby in the barn, so we're not going out into the pastures to look for them at night. It's just easier to bring them into the barn at night and that. And that
this general population, which is we run the cows, the sheep, the goats, the geese for right now, are all pretty much running together in a couple of different pastures, and we rotate our pastures. And with the dairy goat, Lily, and her daughter, Lillian, we do what's called milk share. So Lily, who is our milking goat, will get separated from Lillian at night, but they can see each other. They're in stalls right beside each other. And then in the morning, senior farm boss goes out and milks Lily, which both we and I could do it, but Lily prefers senior farm boss over us. And she uses the milking machine that I talked about earlier. And then once she gets milk, she gets about a quart a day. So she's not a heavy milker, but we're not. It's enough for our family to use. And then once after she milks them, she sends Lily in out with Lily into Gin Pop, and they can go do goat things. They can go browse in the woods, go eat in a pasture. They can hang out in the barn. They do whatever they want. And then in the evening, at evening chores, they'll get brought back in, and Lily will go into her stall and get some feed, and Lillian will go into a separate stall with the other two little goats, and, you know, that's where they'll spend the night. So you've fed the goats, you've let the ducks out, you've let the chickens out.
And fed Miss Piggy,
because Miss Piggy throws an absolute fit if she knows people around and she hasn't been fed yet. Miss Piggy, we'll give you a little background on her, was part of our meat pig group, but her and two of her siblings kept escaping. They escaped one night during an ice storm and they could not get back in. They were too fat to go back through the fence where they had gotten through, so they were literally stuck in the wiring of the fence. They had been out there for a while, so they were hypothermic and they were not doing too well. We brought them into the barn and we managed to save Miss Piggy. We lost the other two. So Miss Piggy had a long road of recovery, and it was in the middle of winter, so we didn't want to put her back out with everybody else. So she stayed in the barn all winter and got fed twice a day. Well, Miss Piggy's now twice the size of all the other pigs, and she's developed quite the personality. She's like a big dog. She likes belly rubs. She'll roll over for you to scratch her belly. She likes head scratches. She will come up and rub on you to get attention. She practically jumps out of her pen when she wants to come out. And she isn't in her pen all the time. We'll let her run around the yard, or she runs around with the sheep. So not too long ago, we left her out all day long unsupervised with the sheep and the goats. She somehow managed to get in with the meat pigs. I don't know if she was looking for some friends, she heard them, wanted to go find somebody to play with. Well, they don't remember her, and they weren't real kind to her. And Miss Piggy has not seen the electric fence since she was a baby, so she did not know about the zapping of the wire. She got stuck back there, and the other pigs were mean to her, so she didn't have a very good adventure out that day. So Miss Piggy will be a pet. She may be bred down the road. But if you come over for a farm tour, Miss Piggy definitely likes to be hand-fed and have belly rubs.
She's very friendly.
Now, what does Miss Piggy smell like sometimes? Not a pig. You would think that pigs stink, but because most of our pigs are on pasture and we don't feed in a confinement operation, the woods pigs get about 3 or 4 acres in the woods in the back of the farm. Miss Piggy has a smaller area, but she does get to get out and roam. So what does Miss Piggy smell like sometimes?
Maple syrup.
Why does she smell like maple syrup?
That is because she's in heat.
So when Miss Piggy is ready to breed, she smells like maple syrup. And when you scratch on her, you can smell the maple syrup on your hands. It's the weirdest thing. Not everybody can smell it. Senior farm boss couldn't smell it for the longest time, and now she does. So we haven't bred Miss Piggy because, one, we don't want piglets in the middle of winter. But we're also waiting for her to get a little bit bigger. Alright, so you fed Miss Piggy, you've let the ducks out, you've let the chickens out, you've let the goats out, fed the goats. Did you forget about the birds up in the loft?
Uh-huh. We have a brooder set up in our barn loft, which we have two different sections to raise different chickens. On one side, we have meat chickens, which we will butcher once they get a little bigger and out on pasture and eat some grass and that. And then on the other side, we have, well, earlier this year, we did have a lot of layers, 64 to be exact.
There's a story with that. Do you want me to tell the story?
Yep.
Okay, so Senior Farm Boss sent us down to Rural King, which is our farm store, and we were going, I don't remember what we were actually going there for, but she says, look out for turkeys. So, okay, we have three turkeys. We've had these turkeys for, like, I don't know, the girls, we've been here since, or for 6 years, we've never had any turkey babies, no eggs. Well, they have laid eggs, but they've never hatched any. We just got a tom turkey, Gobbles.
Gobbles.
He came, and we thought he was doing his job, but we still don't have any eggs or a baby turkey. So she wanted to get some baby turkeys to maybe we raise to eat. So anyway, I digress. This is how my stories go. We went to Rural King. We're walking around and started a conversation with the girl. I think her name's Sabrina. Was working there, and she actually used to work at our tractor supply in Greencastle. Now she's working at the Rural King in Terre Haute. Again, I digress. And I heard her talking about she has all these chicks on the dock that she has to get out, but there's no room on the floor because all of her bins are filled. Well, if you know anything about buying chicks at the farm stores, that usually means that there's a discount involved. So, I asked her, is there any kind of discount for birds? She's like, well, any of these here so that I can get the ones in the back out. I asked her, how many were there? She's like, oh, like 20 or 30. So, I message Home Boss and say, hey, they have 20 or 30 birds for $1 a piece. They're layers, and I want to say they were straight run, but I'm not 100% sure.
I don't know what that means.
Straight run means that they are boys and girls, so chicks and roosters. They don't separate them. So, I think most of them are hens. Again, digress. So, she's, home boss says, sure, as long as there's 20 to 30. So, as Sabrina starts getting out the birds, we're counting. We pass 20, 25, 30, 35. 40, and she starts looking at me and saying, well, I think there's more than that. I was like, well, how many more are there? She's like, oh, just a few more. I said, we'll just take them all. Well, we ended up with 64 birds, a little more than the 30. So we had to break that news to Senior Farm Boss that we kind of blew our budget of 30 birds and went to 64 birds. But they were a dollar piece, and we have pretty cheap feed for them since they are out on pasture and forage. And then whatever extra eggs we have, we can feed them to the dogs, so that reduces our dog feed bill.
It also makes their coat very shiny.
Oh yes, they do have very lovely coats for eating eggs. We have several egg-sucking dogs. Egg-sucking dogs are ones that go and patrol for the nest that the birds lay in random places. And they go check them daily for all these egg spots to see if they can snag an egg. Anyway, back to the point of the 64 birds. So we came home with 64 birds and had to find somewhere to put them. We, a couple of years ago, had a brooder up in the loft where she raised layers and then sold the layers once they were ready to lay. So she got them as chicks, sold them as layers. She made, $120 or so off of those birds?
Probably.
Anyway, so where were we going with this story?
Explaining the
Morning chores and what a brooder is. A brooder is basically a smaller box that has sides so the chicks can't escape, water, food, and a heat lamp because they like to stay around 100 degrees. You want to put it in one corner so that they don't get too hot and they can get away from the lamp if they need to. I would highly, highly suggest using a stationary or a like a light socket that you would put in your house, not those clip-on lights. Those clip-on lights have a tendency to break and fall in the bedding and cause barn fires. There's also some good lights that are available from Premier One that have a big, a nice plastic cage around them that don't break. Also, don't cheap out on your heat lamps. Those $2 or $3 ones that you see at the farm stores, the bases are super, super fragile, and they break very, very easy. So you're buying as many bulbs to replace them if they don't break in the light socket as it would be just to buy one of the more expensive bulbs that are, say, $7 to $10. So you take care of the birds upstairs.
Especially the ones on Chuck's side.
So, another story on Chuck. Chuck was a chicken we raised on the farm. And then we had a mama duck catch 16 babies. Well, that was way too many for one mama duck. So we ended up taking half of them. And senior farm boss was going to raise the ducklings and let mama duck raise hers. Well, Chuck was a chicken that was sitting on a nest, and once she saw all these baby ducks, decided to abandon her nest, and she started caring for the baby ducks like they were her own. So every day, she'd take care of all those babies, and she'd take them down to the pond and sit by the edge of the pond while they went swimming, and she raised them up till almost they were full size. Well, then Chuck started laying the eggs again, and she hatched out more chicks. So every year, Chuck seems to hatch around 2 to 3 clutches of eggs. And Chuck got its name because it was a chicken who thought it was a duck, so we came up with Chuck. Mm-hmm. There are lots of stories on our farm about different animals and different histories, that how animals got their name, or different stories of how they came to the farm.
There's also a video of Chuck's egg that she hatched on my YouTube channel.
Oh, that's right. We have a YouTube channel where she has done videos herself. Some of them have been prompted, so people have asked to do things. Some of them she just randomly goes out and videos. So she did take a video of Chuck the chicken sitting on eggs. Her YouTube channel is Wee Wild Woman. I think she's up to 10 or 15 videos. You have a one on how do people do needle felting, which is one of the items you sell under Wee Wild Woman Enterprises.
Uh-huh. Which we use our sheep's wool to make.
Yep. So we shear our own sheep. We try to shear in March. At least shear the ewes. Ewes are female sheep. And usually our ewes are pregnant, so we shear the pregnant females. And we do this in March so that in April, when they start lambing, the ewes, the moms, are cold or chilly outside the barn. So they want to be inside the barn to give birth. Normally, if you did not shear the sheep, they would drop lambs in January in the snow, and mom has a 4 to 8 inch coat on, and she's perfectly warm, but this new wet baby dropped in the snow more than likely would die from hypothermia. We also control our breeding cycle, so we'll separate rams. Ooh, we're coming up on time now. August, September, I want to say, is when senior farm boss decides to start separating them, so that we do not have lambs in January, February. We postpone them until March, April time frame. And there's always one who decides to get pregnant early.
Uh-huh. Daiquiri.
Daiquiri is one of our biggest sheep.
She grows nice, brain baby. She always grows pretty big kids. She's got a huge brain herself. But she's also as dumb as a box of rocks.
She is not the brightest. She kind of sounds like a cow when she baws. Which has nicknamed her Moo Cow or Dirty Durr, because she's not real bright. You just kind of look at her and go, durr. All right, now let's go back to your chores. So you've taken care of the brooder birds, the chicks, the ducks, your goats. Now, you don't usually have to do anything with the sheep because they're out on whatever pasture they're on and they let themselves out when they're ready to go eat.
But when it's around lambing time, I do go out and do lambing checks a couple of times a day just to make sure that there are any new babies, any ewes that are having issues pushing the lamb out, who looks close. That way I can inform Senior Farm Boss.
Senior Farm Boss is also Mommy.
Mm-hmm.
You let Athena out. Athena is our newest livestock guardian dog. She is still in training. It takes her 2 years before she can be trusted with the animals from the day she comes to the farm. So, Athena is an Anatolian. We got her from Henderson Farms. And they breed Anatolians who are raised with chickens and ducks and goats.
They also breed goats,
too. They do breed boar goats. They have some beautiful-looking boar goats. We'll put links to them in the comments as well as Wee's YouTube channel, our Facebook page, our website. But anyway, Athena will get out occasionally when she's getting supervised to start learning to work with the animals. Livestock guardian dog lives with the animals, and they bond with the animals to protect them from predators. The predators can be from the air or the ground, so Athena will chase off turkey vultures, hawks, anything that's flying above or even on the ground. She does not like anything in her pastures other than the animals.
Yeah, which I teach her to chase off or bark at turkey vultures.
So, you can help train them. We have two other guardian dogs. Megan and Freya, they're not failures. We failed them on training. So when we first got them, we didn't know we needed to train them. We thought they would know what they needed to do. They imprinted on us and the house versus imprinting on the animals. So all they want to do is hang around the house and hang around the people. But then they started chasing cars, and cars were the bad thing. So instead of hanging out with the sheep and being protective of the sheep, they want to chase cars all day.
Yep.
Because we're close to town and we do live on a road, that was starting to become an issue. So, they're relearning. So, we don't have a high predator load. We have coyotes in the area, but because the dogs do patrol, we haven't seen any around the farm in a while.
They go in a
1 mile radius around the farm. So the dogs will patrol roughly 1 square mile around the farm. We have nesting pairs of hawks. We have nesting pairs of owls. And neither one of those have really had any kind of impact on the farm. We did have a problem with foxes because the foxes learned that the girls, which are our livestock guardian dogs, Segan and Freya, were being locked up during the day because they were chasing cars or runners or bikers. And the fox would start coming during the day versus the evening. And we started losing ducks and chickens. Senior Farm Boss put an end to the fox. We haven't seen any since then.
Near our chicken coop and that.
Near the chicken coop and whatnot. So we think we've deterred them. For the most part, our farm policy is live and let live. If you're wildlife and you want to live on the property, as long as you stay in your area and don't bother our animals, you're welcome to stay here. We have lots of deer that we see regularly on different cameras. Squirrels. We had a bunch of raccoons. But then they started coming in and going after animals, so we eliminated quite a few raccoons. We haven't seen them back in a while. The hawks don't bother anything, like I said. Let's see, what other kind of... The only predator that we have had a big issue with is the black-faced vulture. Now, these are different than the red-faced vultures, which are native to Indiana, and they typically only eat carrion or dead animals. The black-faced vultures will eat live animals. They will take down lambs. They will take down calves that have just come out, and they're very, very vicious. They peck out the mom's eyes so that she can't go after them. And then they start attacking the baby. And they literally peck it to death while it's alive. We lost, I want to say the first year we were breeding, like 7 lambs. And we didn't know what it was because we just find body parts. It might be a head or a leg. And any kind of predator that we ran across would either take it or eat it right there. And why would it leave a head or leave a, you know, a leg?
And we have been able to save a few lambs before. We saved one lamb. His name was Nubs. He had an ear missing and his tail, I think, began to Nubs, but we got home just in time to save him.
And that's where we first realized that it was the black-faced vultures, was when we saw what was going on. Nubs was a twin, and we didn't realize the twin was over the hill and already dead when we found him. Mom was defending him, but I think the other one was already gone. There were 40 or 50 vultures in the field, all going after these babies and the mom. And so we contacted Department of Natural Resources, and they told us that it's illegal to shoot these birds. They are a federally protected species, even if they're going after your livestock. Now, you can get a permit to shoot them, but in order to go through it through DNR, which is the Department of Natural Resources, you had to jump through all kinds of hoops and hurdles, and they told us we had to give lamb only in the barn. Well, with the number of animals, we didn't have the room for all of the lambs to be in the barn all the time, or the ewes. So it really wasn't an option. Then they wanted us to do all these deterring methods. They wanted us to have video proof that the animal, that the vultures were attacking and not just picking on carrion. And it just was a big hassle. Farm Bureau of Indiana stepped in, and they got a larger permit, and you can apply to them to get your permit to shoot the vultures. Now, even on the DNR page, they say if you kill a vulture protecting your livestock, you are to leave the vulture there because they can't stand the smell of their own dead. So since we've started actively patrolling, we will actively discourage the vultures from roosting anywhere on the farm. So if we see them, we will shoot in their general direction to discourage them from landing in our farm. Now, we can see them across the road at a neighboring field. We can see them at different places around our farm, but for the most part, they don't land on our farm anymore, which is a good thing. We've gone 2 years and not lost any lambs to them. So there are positive results, but these vultures are definitely nasty birds.
Yes, and they deserve to die.
So let's see, what else can we talk about that you do? Is that pretty much all your morning chores? Letting Athena out, or
letting her play with her playmate Thorsten?
Thorsten is our house dog. He was brought in from Indianapolis as, a feral dog. He was told that he was a great day, but he's not. He's a big old pity mix, and he's a big lap dog who thinks he's 20 pounds chihuahua.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. We have 4 dogs, 7 cats. Those are indoor and outdoor cats. The outdoor cats are supposed to be organic pest control for the mice, but I think we feed them too well because we see mice and they're always begging for food. So how long does it take you for morning chores?
It depends if the brooder chickens upstairs need more water in their water and that. Usually I don't have to fill them every day, like every other day. But probably I'd say maybe 20 minutes to half an hour at best.
And that's all the chores that you do for the day until the evening, right? I mean, we do go check animal waters and the troughs and the tanks and things, but for the most part, we have them under downspouts or with gutters, and they get filled every time it rains, so we really don't have to do too much other than verify that there is water in all of them.
And they can reach it.
And they can reach it, or we have to break ice sometimes for some of the troughs that are further away from buildings. So after chores, you pretty much either play with the dogs or
my little goats.
Play with the goats, do little different piddly things outside, and then you come in and start on homeschool, right?
And if I don't have any homeschool, I'll go upstairs and do arts and crafts, which could be painting, making stuff for my hot glue gun, making stuff for a friend, or just playing with my toys and that.
So you just got done with 4-H this year, the 4-H fair.
Mm-hmm. Well, technically not yet. We do have something we need to go back into.
So your horse, Western, today, she does horses in 4-H, and they had to postpone due to some storms that came through, and the arena was too wet for them to ride. So they postponed for 2 weeks for them to be able to complete their projects. So you both ride Val, who's our big horse, he's an Arabian, and then you do groundwork or rope lead for Coco, who's the pony. He's a Shetland pony, right?
Uh-huh. We believe he is a Shetland pony.
So she'll be doing that coming up this weekend. So what all do you do at fair, and kind of tell people what the fair experience is like for you?
Well, one of the things I do in the community building, which is just a whole bunch of different projects, which you don't show animals in that for, there's 4 or 5 types of cake decorating, woodworking, electric working, so much stuff.
Talk louder.
Sorry. There's just a whole bunch of stuff in that. Community building in that. You can even grow plants in that to do. But the stuff I do is cake decorating and Lego have been what I've done for the past year. Which cake decorating is, you have a foam board, you do like a bare space layer of icing, and then you have to do so many different designs in that. Techniques.
Techniques, that's what I was going to get at. So it's using the piping technique, or you squeeze it through kind of a tube with different tips, so to make like flowers and different kinds of shapes by twisting the tips or dotting them. It's not my cup of tea, but she likes it.
Farm of Us does it too, because we do cake stuff for different birthdays or special occasions.
So, just because you don't have animals doesn't mean you can't participate in 4-H. Uh-huh. So this was going to be your 3rd year or 4th year?
I don't know if it's 3rd or 4th. It may be 4th, it may be 3rd. I can't remember.
In 4-H, but she was robbed her 1st year because they shut everything down because of the virus. We don't want to say it because then we'll get censored. So, you did horses and ponies this year, and you did a scramble goat. A scramble goat is one that somebody donates a goat to a kid who raises it, and then they show that goat as part of 4-H show bill, and then the goat is to be auctioned, and the kids get the money. And some of the money goes back to the person who donated it, some of it goes to the kids. We didn't exactly follow protocol this year, and the little goat was only 38 pounds. His name is Lugnut.
We just call him Lug.
We call him Lug, who has his own theme song. It is the song from the President of the United States, the song Lug, or Lump. And we changed Lump to Lug and sing the song to him. He likes it. Lug acts more like a dog than a goat. He doesn't quite know how to goat. But we fell in love with him. And when we started off, we were told we could buy him back at auction. But she was willing to give up her salary, which she is salaried because she gets paid for all of her chores on the farm. She was willing to give up her salary, whatever it took to get that goat to come back home. She didn't care. It wasn't worth the money. At the very end of the process, after she had shown, we asked again about buying the goat, bringing him home, and we were told that he is required to be terminal, meaning that he has to go on the auction and he has to be sent to the processor, which was very hard to hear. It was heartbroken, and even the person who donated the goat did not want this goat to go to be butchered. A 38-pound little weather goat may produce 10 pounds of ground meat. Lug was too much of a character to be just sent for meat for no other reason than he was a scramble goat. So we kind of liberated him and took him home without telling anybody.
Uh-huh.
So he came home, and now he's going to be a farm ambassador because he's very small. He doesn't even come up to your knees.
Uh-huh.
He's a maximum of probably 40 pounds. That's if he's had dinner. But he doesn't jump. He doesn't get in your face. He doesn't headbutt. He's very gentle. He likes pets. So any little kids who come onto the farm for tours or want to learn about animals or pet animals, Lug is a perfect farm ambassador. So that's where Lug escaped the death sentence of being a scramble goat to become a farm ambassador at our farm.
Mm-hmm.
So with horses, you don't just show the horses. What else do you do?
What do you mean by not just show them?
So you don't just say, here's my horse, those are the parts of the horse. You ride, you
uh-huh.
do games, you do different competitions. So talk about some of those, because some people don't know what's going, you know, what they've done. They've never been to a 4-H show. They've never been to a horse show. So,
in my opinion, the Putnam County Horse Club, it isn't like any other fair, and the horse club is like a huge family. You go and do games, pitching. They have like, they do all kinds of different stuff for the kids.
I'll have to admit that of the barns, of the activities at the farm, the horse and pony group for Putnam County is, they're like family. They camp out for fairs. They all bring their RVs and stock trailers and horse trailers. They sleep, you know, the kids like basically kind of go from camper to camper and different nights they sleep. They go on barn watch together. If a kid, so a junior member, so like we as a younger member, the senior members help mentor them and show them the way,
actually,
teach them.
Uh-huh. Early this year, I don't want to scare anybody. Decided to roll and like everybody, all the adults, everyone who wasn't on the horses literally came running over to help this girl. She was fine the next day. It's just her, she got stuck in the stirrup and couldn't get her foot out fast enough.
So, give you a little background because you weren't there and I was. They were doing a show, a riding area, and there were multiple kids in the ring. And I think it was in the makeup ring, which is where you're kind of practicing.
Uh-huh.
And the horse, we don't know if the saddle was bothering it or what was going on, but the horse laid down and the girl got trapped underneath. And her leg was stuck in the stirrup underneath the horse. So as the horse is rolling, trying to get the saddle off, the girl was underneath it. So once that happened, everybody stopped. All of the kids in the arenas went to the side. Parents, whether it was her parents or not, all the parents jumped the fence, went to help her, carried her out. They got the horse under control. It was all hands on deck. But that's just one example. I mean, the horse and pony group, they celebrate birthdays together. This year was a lot of the 10-year members, so you're in 4-H for 10 years, so at age 18, when you're graduating high school, it's usually your last year. And there were lots of tears for some of these senior members.
Uh-huh, because a lot of these kids, like, helped mentor so many of them.
And they were, you were raised with them, so you've seen these kids grow over the years.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so the Horse and Pony Group is a great group. They have their own barn separate from everybody else. They have their own arena separate from everybody else.
They also do a scavenger hunt and all of that also for the Horse and Pony. I don't know if the other barns do this. And they also hide them. It's the Golden Horseshoe. I haven't found it yet, but basically it's just a Golden Horseshoe and they hide it somewhere on the Horse and Pony grounds and there's always a prize for it.
Yep. So they do a lot for these kids, and it really is like a big extended family. Being part of the other barns in the last couple of years, we just don't see that same level of togetherness, camaraderie. Now, it's not all peaches and you know, cream. There are some struggles and some issues sometimes, but for the most part, it's all things that can be worked out fairly easy. Let's see, what else? We've talked about fair. Fair's, you're almost done with fair. You've done some different competitions of things not animal related. We talked about our two different kinds of pigs. We talked about the different chickens. We process our own meat birds as well.
Mm-hmm.
Lee is a part of that process. She helps. We shear our own sheep. Oh, let's talk about syrup. We also make our own maple and black walnut syrup. If you didn't know, there are 26 different trees in Indiana you can tap for syrup or make syrup from. In the case of shagbark hickory, you use the bark, not the sap from the tree. So we and I tap trees, maple and black walnut. I think this year we did exclusively black walnut, didn't we?
Yeah, we did all black walnut this year. Because we couldn't do both at the same time. It took too much time.
So, this is also where Betty got her sap-sucking part of her name. We tap the trees. You tap trees when the daytime temperatures are above freezing and the nighttime temperatures are below freezing. In the spring, so it just depends from year to year. Sometimes that's February, sometimes January, sometimes it's all the way out into March. You got to go by temperature, you can't go by calendar date. So anyway, we had several black walnut and maple trees in a pasture where Betty happened to be overwintering. Betty got curious. She started sucking the sap from the taps on the trees, and when she couldn't get any more sap, she chewed up all of my taps. She would knock all of the buckets over, collecting the sap so that she could drink it. So Betty, again, naughty cow. Now everybody says, if Betty has so many problems, why don't you just eat her? Because Betty has personality,
mm-hmm.
And Betty loves me. She's my cow.
Uh-huh.
Even though I didn't bottle raise her, we and senior farm boss raised her. She loves me.
You did raise her for a while.
So, we tap the trees, we boil down the syrup, we sell the syrup. I don't know what more we could say about the syrup other than we do that. In your opinion, because you might be biased, how much better is it than the stuff that you get at the store?
It depends on which one it is. Black walnut, it is much more flavorful than normal syrup. It has much more flavor in that to it, but it is much thinner than the stuff you would buy at the store. But I don't really we don't really get the stuff from the store. So.
We haven't bought stuff from the store in years.
Yeah, we haven't bought syrup from the store in years.
We sell the syrup when we have it available. We currently have some. It is, what is it, 1st of August. So we'll be selling the rest of it for the rest of the year and then stocking back up next year.
Mm-hmm.
Each year we've built a bigger syrup operation. So whether that's getting more taps, getting an evaporator, building a sugar shack is on the list. A sugar shack is where you boil down your syrup. Anybody can do it. It's not hard. If you have maple, any kind of maple, you can do it. If you have a black walnut tree, you want to go, I want to say the smallest diameter is 12 inches for one tap. There's gauges that you can look online of how many taps per tree.
It doesn't hurt the tree. The tree will regrow in about a year or so.
It'll heal the wounds. It doesn't do too much for it as far as harming. You don't want too many taps because what you're using is the stored sugars that the tree has had all winter long, and that's what it's using to put out new growth. So taking a couple of gallons from the trees is not going to be that detrimental, especially when that time of the year they're replacing it as they start to grow.
It's not like a syrup that you get from the store, like it comes out in a brown color when you get it out of the tree. It's more of like a clear water with like sugar taste in it.
Oh, it's super thin, so I want to say 1 gallon of sap for the black walnut will get you about a pint or a quart, depending on how thick you make it. We don't typically make it super thick just because it doesn't need to be that thick for you to get the full flavor. Sorry, I'm pausing because we're in traffic. We hate coming to Indy because there's way too many people. It's too congested. There's no trees. It's all just concrete and brick, and we want to go back to our hill.
Especially the road to go to the Spin Crane place. Instead of having two roads on the side, they made a room for a bike path on one side and the other side a sidewalk. So it narrows down from two lanes to only one lane.
So it's a bottleneck. So anyway, let's see, what else do we do? We do fiber art with the wool sheet. We'll take those, and we have the equipment to process it from straight on the sheet all the way into a final product of making yarn or weaving, because we have looms. I've built looms for my wife, Navajo floor looms. A lot of times we'll build things or make do just because it's cheaper, or I don't like the design of whatever equipment is out there. I think it can be more efficient.
Think anything can be more efficient.
That's my background. So my background, didn't ever go into this, I spent 20 plus years in the pharmaceutical industry, working in the labs and in engineering with them. So I have that in my background. But Six Sigma, which is about efficiencies and reduction of waste and energy, was, I love that concept of it, which led me to being permaculture trained. And you know, that's a whole other topic of permaculture. I'm teaching Wee as we go along about the permaculture principles and using that in her daily life and how we do things on the farm using permaculture. For those of you who don't know, permaculture is a design science, so it's designing agriculture to maximize the benefits while minimizing inputs and wastes. So you can do a lot of stuff with a little bit of land. If you've never watched the Jeff Lawton video, Urban Permaculture. Highly recommend it. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Odyssey. If you don't know what Odyssey is, it's a non-censored platform like YouTube for video and audio content. They do, you know, documents as well. But you can tip people using cryptocurrency if you like their content, and that's how they get paid. So if, instead of having all these ads run across your YouTube video or being censored by what you can and can't say on YouTube, Odyssey, you can say whatever you want and not be censored. And if people like your content, they can tip you. And that's how you can turn that cryptocurrency into actual dollars. Mm-hmm. We also has a Odyssey channel.
I do?
You do. I set it up. It just copied all your stuff from YouTube and put it in Odyssey.
Okay.
You know, I haven't checked your Odyssey account in a while, so maybe we need to do that and see if anybody's tipped you anything.
Who knows?
So another part of the problem in Indy is they're always doing construction on the roads. So that creates even more bottlenecks. I mean, you'd think that they would make roads that are built to last. The Romans could do it. Why can't we?
But because the Romans are way smarter than this generation is?
Probably. They also didn't have as heavy equipment or, you know, massive semi-trailers going down the road. But they also weren't full of greed and using tax dollars to spend like it's going out of style. We're not going to get started on taxes and government because someone will start dropping the F-bomb and getting
yes,
all
I will.
Antagonistic about how they are wasting our money and the laws about it. We'll probably do another podcast just on some of those regulations and laws, especially that we have to follow as a farm, or I should say we're supposed to follow. But we are fast approaching our destination of the spent grains. We are getting these from West Fork Distillery, or West Fork Whiskey Company. Great organization. They are getting ready to build a new facility. They make whiskeys and bourbons. They're going to have an eating area. Great bunch of guys. But they were upset about all of this spent grain that was going into basically the landfill. And they reached out to me about picking this up to use for feed for our animals. And doing their nutritional information, it's actually a really good resource for us. And we don't have to pay for it. They don't have to pay to get rid of it. And it's keeping it out of the landfill. So we could go into more detail about that probably when we talk about the pigs. But that's going to be it for today. We're right under an hour, so that actually worked out pretty well. So this is the Fat Man Farmer, and
we wild them.
Signing off. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye.